The message for this second service is part of the series on giving a soft answer to tough questions. Instead of trying to be smart alecky or sassy or something to people, you try to be careful with them, gentle with them, and try to help them understand what you're talking about. Now, the message here is in answer to the question, hasn't the New Testament changed by repeated copying? Now, the good thing is we have great answers to this, say we as Christians. The bad thing is that this is based on this really deep and difficult study of ancient things, of manuscripts and so on. And so it's not something that you and I would easily be able to just access and study. So I'm presenting to you a result of a great deal of study, not so much my part, but I've accumulated that study by people who have given their hearts and lives to the study of manuscripts, evaluating them, checking them out, and so on. So a common misconception that people have is that the text of the Bible has not come down to us the way it was originally written. The idea I mentioned earlier is the idea that if you had a page and you wanted to copy it, you just look and copy and copy, you probably would make a mistake. And then if somebody took your copy and copied it exactly, they'd be copying your mistake. Then if somebody copied that one and they made a mistake, but it'd be in a different spot, then that mistake would be carried on. So they imagine doing that through hundreds and hundreds of years and thinking why the New Testament probably doesn't sound anything like it did at the beginning. But it's not true. The accusations abound of zealous monks changing the biblical text throughout the church history. The idea is that they think that the Bible doctrine wasn't settled for hundreds of years. Actually, Bible doctrine was settled the very time that it was written. It was settled because the people who wrote it were the ones who lived with Jesus Christ. They were the disciples. They were the apostles. So they were writing what they knew. They were writing about their own personal experiences. They weren't writing some summation of doctrine. Now, that question is clearly fairly simple and easy to come by. But what about after the manuscripts were written, what about that copying? Well, the issue is of utmost importance, and an altered text would then be do grave damage to the credibility of the story. Who knows when they put that part in? So let me introduce to you a man. His name is Frederick Fivey Bruce. I looked up the name, always known as F.F. Bruce, and Fivey, that sounds funny to me, like he was 1E and then 2E and then 3E, 4E and 5E, I don't know, but you just wonder. But he was a Bible scholar. He died in 1990. A Bible scholar who supported the historical reliability of the New Testament. Here's a guy who just went into the education, studied it all, learned languages, and just focused on this because he said, we ought to know this. And I want to know if it's real or not. So he got into it. Now, he is, do I have a picture? Let me see. He said this, the historical once-for-allness, now he made that up, of course, the historical once-for-allness of Christianity, which distinguishes it from those religious and philosophical systems, which are not specifically related to any particular time, makes the reliability of the writings which purport to record this revelation a question of first-rate importance. In other words, if you're writing a philosophy thing, then, and if somebody changes it just a bit, I could move out here if I wanted to see it. didn't want to be, get in the way. There we go. Okay. I found that bush, and there it was, just like a wall. And I said, hey, I'm going to take a picture of it. This is not writing their religious philosophies. This is writing the story of Christ. And so changing that means this is a first-rate question. So we'll get back to some other things that F.F. Bruce says. Now, fortunately for us, the problem does not lack evidence. There are three different types of evidence that are used to evaluate the New Testament text. This is all technical. You're not going to go away saying, boy, that really blessed my heart. What it's going to do is maybe bless your head and say, now I know they've gone through this. They've done the study. They didn't just imagine. This is the real thing. So first of all, the Greek manuscripts. Manuscript. Manu is for hand. Script is a writing. These are the handwritten beginning things before the printing press. The New Testament was originally composed in the Greek language, and interestingly, we have approximately 5,500 copies in existence that contain all or part of the New Testament. Now, I want you to just see it all laid out on the table there. 5,500 copies of the entire New Testament, or at least a significant part. Now, the New Testament was written from about AD 50 to AD 90. So John, writing the book of the Revelation, he was probably a teenager when he became one of the disciples. And so he lived the longest and died being boiled in oil. Not a good way to go, but for his faith. And that around 90. So only 90 years at the end of Christ's life. The earliest fragment dates about AD 120. So the last of the actual writings was AD 90, and then AD 120, the first fragment of a manuscript we have. So about 50 other fragments during 150 to 200 years from the time of composition. This is amazingly early. Two major manuscripts, Codex Vaticanus, AD 325, and Codex Sinaiticus, AD 350, complete copy, date within 250 years of the time of composition. We say, well, 250 years, that's a long time. The thing is, it's minimal compared to most ancient works. We start talking about manuscripts from ancient works. Perhaps you've heard of Herodotus. He was a Greek historian, born around 484 BC, long, long time ago. He wrote a single monumental work called The Histories. I guess it was just history of everything. We have only 8 copies of his work. And the earliest was made 1,300 years after he wrote. That's the first copy ever made, and we only have 8 copies left. So do you think chance that that might have got changed within 1,300 years? Likely so. Another man, Gaius Valerius Catullus, a Roman poet, 84 BC, 54 BC, his surviving works include about 116 poems. We have only 3 copies of his work, and the earliest one was made 1,600 years after he wrote. This is the way it worked with ancient manuscripts. We have 5,500 of the New Testament. So you can compare one to the other, you see. Julius Caesar, you've heard of him, composed the Gallic Wars, a history, between 58 and 50 BC. The first copy of that was made 1,000 years after it was written, 1,000 years. So Homer, legendary Greek poet, likely lived during the 8th century BC. He wrote the Odyssey. You've heard of that, and of Odysseus. And the first copy was made 2,200 years later. So we're talking about within 200 years, we have hundreds of copies and some in full New Testament copies. So just to summarize it, in the field of manuscripts, compared to other ancient works, the New Testament proves to be much closer to the time of the original. Our 5,500 copies are by far the most we have of any ancient work. If any ancient work could be believed, it would be the New Testament. Historically, most ancient writings have been transmitted to us by only a handful of manuscripts, and we have the luxury of 5,500. So that's the first way to check this out. The second, besides the manuscripts, are the ancient translations of the New Testament. The New Testament came upon a scene where the world hadn't heard of this before, and where Christ was not particularly known, in other words, other lands. The New Testament came and hit it like a storm. People were saying, this is amazing. And so they began to translate it into their own language. Now, this is ancient times. The New Testament documents were also translated into several other languages at a very early date. There's a very early Ethiopian translation. Might have begun even with the Ethiopian eunuch that's mentioned in the New Testament. Now, since the translation of a document into another language was very rare in the ancient world, this is an added plus for the New Testament. In other words, by checking how they translated it into the other language, you can go back and see what was likely the words were used in the Greek. Now, the number of copies of the versions, the translations, is in excess of 18,000, with possibly as many as 25,000, because as archaeology develops, they keep finding more. Because these were made so early, this helps us establish the original New Testament text. Just by saying that, you know, it wouldn't have been a different copy back in those days, so this establishes the original text. And then the third and the last that we'll look at is the writings of the church fathers. Who are the church fathers? Well, those are the first guys that were leaders in the church. The text of the New Testament could still be reproduced from quotations made of the New Testament within 250 years of its composition. And how does this happen? By the writings of the early Christians who quoted the New Testament. These people got saved. They said, this is a message that needs to get out. They started writing about it. They were quoting the scripture like you do in sermons, and then writing out what it means and sending this out. They were sending out letters like the Apostle Paul sent out letters. So in commentaries and just personal letters and all that, these ancient writers quote the biblical text, thus giving us another witness to the text of the New Testament. Let me introduce to you John William Burgon, August 21st, 1813 to August 7th, 1888. He was an English Anglican divine. I would feel so strange if people said, What do you do for a living? I'm a divine. You know, it doesn't sound like what you would say today, you know. But that's what they called him in that time. And he became the dean of Chichester Cathedral in 1876, which doesn't mean a whole lot to me, but it was considered a very high thing. Now, he's remembered by our group because we recognize that the critical Greek text that's being used now to translate the modern translations, that critical Greek text was written by unbelievers. Westcott and Hort, they just they wanted to, they didn't like the Bible. And so they said, evolution means that the earlier manuscripts would have mistakes in it and all that. So go out and find the ones with mistakes. And they did. Then they translated this Greek text out of all that. So we go back to the Textus Receptus and find that a comfort to that. Now he's remembered, Burgon is remembered for his passionate defense of the historicity and the Mosaic authorship of Genesis and of biblical inerrancy in general, that it was just not, did not have errors. Now he went to work, and this man alone cataloged more than 86,000 citations by the early church fathers who cite different parts of the New Testament. Most of them were writing in Greek, and so their quotes came right out of the Greek New Testament. This gives us so much more evidence for the reliability of the New Testament text than any other comparable writing in the ancient world. 86,000 quotes, and the statement is made, the challenge is made, that they could actually rewrite the entire New Testament from these people's quotes. So back to F.F. Bruce, Mr. Fivey, remember him? He says, the evidence for our, listen to his conclusion, the evidence for our New Testament writings is ever so much greater than the evidence for many writings of classical authors, the authenticity of which no one dreams of questioning. If somebody was writing about Caesar's history, and somebody said, I don't think that was the original, they said, what are you, crazy? We got the copies right here. And our copies are far, far better authenticated. Then again, Bruce said, if the New Testament were a collection of secular writings, their authenticity would generally be regarded as beyond all doubt. He said the only reason there's any doubt is because it says the remarkable things that it does say. Now, let me close with introducing to Sir Frederick George Kenyon, 1863 to 1952. He was a British paleographer and a biblical and classical scholar. He was one of the foremost experts, and this is what paleographer means, an expert on ancient manuscripts and their authority. He studied like all the possible ancient languages that there are. So this fellow, pretty august looking, here's the key quotes from Kenyon. The interval then, between the dates of original composition and the earliest extant evidence, in other words, the first copies, become so small as to be, in fact, negligible, as if it doesn't matter at all. And the last foundation for any doubt that the scriptures have come down to us substantially as they were written has now been removed. He said the extent of our study has been such, I mean, going into the details, checking out the words, checking out the letters. He said, it has removed all doubt. There is no serious scholarship that doubts this is exactly what it was at the beginning. Again, in his book, The Story of the Bible, both the authenticity, reality, and the general integrity of the books of the New Testament may be regarded as finally established. He said the work that has been done is enough. It needs no further work. It's been proved. And then the last one, coming from chapter 10, I don't know why the others didn't have a chapter with them, but the story of the Bible. It is indeed a striking proof of the essential soundness of the tradition that with all these thousands of copies, the variations of text are so entirely questions of detail, not of essential substance. Somebody says, well, look, in 5,500 copies, there are some differences. There are hundreds of differences. And he said, yes, but once the study was done, we found out that it was like singular or plural that was a miscopy. It was a misspelling of something, like a proper name. He said, but all the essentials, none of that was changed. All of that was clearly copied correctly. All right, close then. These statements reflect Kenyon's deep trust in the textual transmission of the New Testament, especially in light of manuscript discoveries and scholarly analysis. He said the work is complete. Check other ancient manuscripts. They haven't been able to authenticate theirs anywhere close to what we have been able to do for the New Testament. So he bolstered confidence in the historical reliability of the biblical texts. Fact is, the question has been asked, the question has been answered, and we have what was originally written as the New Testament. So we can have the scholarship testimony that it has been checked and found authentic.